This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Tonight's final bout is for the Intercontinental Heavyweight Championship, scheduled for one fall or to curfew.
From the Portland Sports Arena.
Wrestling fans, Bob Caudle and Johnny Weaver. Welcome to Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, the most exciting.
2-7 CFAC Calgary.
Once again, good afternoon, everyone. We're bringing you Mat Time action from the Victoria Pavilion in Calgary.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to another edition of the Stampede Wrestling Show. Hello again, everyone. It is me, Travis Woloshin. I am here once again with Kelly Nelson to continue our journey here on the Titans of Wrestling podcast, the Stampede territory. Kelly, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Good.
Yes.
Cool. We've been talking about this for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Getting into the episodes from the late 70s that were on the network for a couple days.
Yeah, it was very, Bret Hart, I think the story goes.
Yeah.
Had some sort of issues with it being on there without his permission, was that?
Yeah, it was never really made clear.
Because they had a big mass dump of different territory shows all at the same time. And the Stampede one got a lot of people excited because it was mostly footage I don't think anybody had in their collections. Because this is the Masters.
Yeah.
Whereas the other stuff was mostly from the 80s. So stuff that people had taped off TV at some point. And had, so it wasn't rare like this.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, but we do have it.
We do have it. I'm confused by, so why are they allowed to throw that hidden gem on that we're going to talk about quickly
that's,
at the end?
That's
here?
A good question. I do not know. I mean, I don't know. Like, does Bret have the rights to everything or just some of it? I should have went back and looked before this show just to check, because that's just what I remember hearing at the time.
I'm surprised. Like this guy still does a lot of interviews. He's still getting out there, getting his voice heard whenever Seth Rollins injures somebody or something. But, so why isn't somebody asking him this question? Like, are we the only people who can give a shit about it?
I know it's
not true, but they're just, it's a straightforward question. Like, hey, Bret, the Stampede stuff was on the...
Yeah.
Network for a while and now it's gone. What's going on?
Yeah, I think we have to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, one of these days.
Because there could be a potential gold mine that they're sitting on that's just...
I think if they just drop that hidden gem, that's two episodes earlier than the earliest known episode, then that tells me there's a lot. Okay, so I think... Should we just get into this?
Yeah, we'll look at a few of the episodes. There were six in total. So this, this show will do maybe two, maybe? Nah, two, I guess, right?
I'd love to do three, but I've got a ton of notes here and I don't have any notes for the third one. Even though it did have what may be the best match we've seen so far.
Yeah. And then, like you said, at the very end, we'll talk about the Hidden Gem match, Gino Morella versus Dave Rule.
Dave Rule, who we were just talking about.
Yeah, and what a coincidence.
Yeah, that's so cool. We had no footage of, and now we finally get to see him.
Yeah, we have one match.
Yeah. That's great. Okay, so this starts, the episodes start on November 12th, 1978.
We've got silent titles. Was it always like this?
No, that's because this is the Masters, so that would have been added in.
Oh, okay.
You know, in post production, mm-hmm. right? So that's just how it is. There was music over.
Was it the original? Always the same.
I think maybe, but I'm not 100% sure on that.
Okay. And our first match. Here we go. Jerry Morrow. And Fighting Hara, how do you spell it?
Fighting Hara, H-A-R-A.
That's what I guessed. Against the Cuban Assassins.
Yes.
When we were watching mm-hmm. wrestling in the 80s, we knew the one Cuban Assassin.
Yes.
And here we see him with Cuban Assassin number 2. I guess he is Cuban Assassin number 1. Isn't that just what they were calling them?
Yes. Yeah. The one that we were familiar with from the 80s. Fidel Sierra, I think his name is. He worked some other territories. Definitely one of the more memorable guys,
oh, yeah.
you know, because he would hide foreign objects in his beard, in his hair,
yeah.
and he had the cargo pants, which also had all the pockets for foreign objects.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I don't know if I was aware that there was another Cuban assassin.
Mm-hmm.
And the other Cuban assassin is a man named Jack Kruger.
Okay.
Who worked a few years in the, like, 86, 87 as a jobber in the WWF. And otherwise worked like a chic gimmick, Ali Hassan, in various territories, but not a very well-known guy. And this arguably may have been like his most high-profile position.
Of his career,
yeah, 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 highest he ever got on the cards.
Do you know where he was from? For real?
I don't think this is coming from WrestlingData.com, my go-to source. Put together by fine German folks, and it's a really great site. I don't think his profile had a birthplace. I think I would have noted that.
It could either be Havana, or what was the other
he's definitely
or,
not
or
Cuban.
Somewhere in the Middle East.
He's definitely not Cuban, because the picture they had on the site was from later when he was in the WWF as a jobber, and you can tell he's definitely just a white guy.
Was he wrestling under that name Kruger there?
In the WWF,
in the WWF?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so this match starts... or do you have anything on Fighting Hara?
What did I get on him? So in the 80s, he would be a part of All Japan, pretty mm-hmm. much for the whole decade. And I'm not an expert on All Japan wrestling. I think anyone listening is, they would definitely have recognized him, or recognized the name. Asura Hara. It looked like he was, you know, in the mix for quite a few years. And when a bunch of guys jumped in 1990, or not jumped, but left the company, led by Genucho Tenryu,
yep.
and they left and formed a new company called SWS. And anyway, that's when Mitsuhara Misawa got the push, because Tenryu was gone.
Sure.
But Hara was one of the guys that left with Tenryu to go to this new company in 1990.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, okay. So he's definitely got a story there, too.
Mm-hmm. In the future, yeah.
yeah. So this match starts 5 minutes in, which is not bad by Calgary clipping standards,
no,
right?
No, not at all.
It's really interesting to see the Champagne Man, Jerry Morrow, as a babyface, because
mm-hmm.
We grew up just despising the guy.
Right. I remember when I first started, he was still a babyface.
Yeah.
But then he turned heel not too long after.
Mm-hmm. So it starts with Jerry and Fighting Hard just dominating, and they have to change... the something. I don't know what I have written on here. It's my chicken scratch. Jerry, a ton of hot energy.
Mm-hmm.
He starts hot stepping. When he starts to get his... it's not quite the House of Fire, because we do see him House of Fire later,
yeah.
but when he starts to kind of get the turn there, the hope
yeah.
spot, he's hot stepping, he gets a cheap shot.
Yeah.
He gets a cheap shot on the outside Cuban.
Mm-hmm.
Has a good bit of ass kicking going on. The crowd loved him.
Mm-hmm.
And Assassin number 1 is tagged in. He's a really broad, straightforward style,
mm-hmm.
but it looks snug.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
not bad.
It's not, you know, it's nothing fancy, but it's not like, ugh. You know?
Oh, no, no.
Yeah.
He was kind of like a George the Animal Steel type.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if that's great.
Yeah.
Like, saying something like giving him praise
yeah.
or anything, but no, he didn't work like totally loose and like,
uh-huh.
like look bad or anything.
Yeah, yeah. Was he exclusively Stampede?
No, he worked Portland
mm-hmm.
In the early 80s. I can't think of any other territories off the top of my head, but
okay.
I think he definitely worked more than just that. And then by the mid-80s, or when Stampede came back in 85, 86, he was there pretty much exclusively, I would say, then. Because it seemed like he was there on every show that we watched.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He was a staple, like, man. That's what I was just thinking. Like, is this guy just put up a shop in, you know, I don't know, Bowness? I'm trying to think of a neighborhood in Calgary.
Probably closer. I want to just say that all the wrestlers lived in, like, Victoria Park area.
Yeah.
I think we're pretty sure Jason the Terrible did.
Yeah, we saw him walk home from that one show. That's hilarious. So there was a hilarious double team when Assassin Number Two is like, or Assassin One's holding, I think it's Mauro Dowd, and Assassin Number Two makes this, bounces off the ropes and does this really funny splash. Do you remember this?
Yes.
It was just like really nice, like swan dive form. You just didn't expect it.
Yeah.
And from the angle that it was shot at too, it looked hilarious. So it's at this point where Eddie starts to promote Paradise Alley.
Yes.
Filming in the Calgary area.
Well, yeah. Was it in the Calgary area?
Was it? I don't know.
No, or, and I think he was just saying. Show a trailer for it during the next commercial break.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And it had some talent that they knew.
Oh, it's got a ton of wrestlers in it. I've still, to this day, I've never seen it.
Yeah.
No, it was, well.
Is Terry Funk the star?
No, it's a Sylvester Stallone movie. It was kind of like his follow-up to Rocky, almost. Wow. Where he plays a wrestler, like that. The movie is about him being a wrestler, and there's, you know, a bunch of guys from that era are in it. Like Ted DiBiase's in it, so you know, young Ted DiBiase, Dick Murdoch's in it.
Wow,
Funk,
Kaniski, did I hear?
Gene Kaniski, yeah, maybe.
He named off a couple guys. I thought,
One of these days I gotta finally track it down, because it's like, it's not like there's a ton of wrestling movies out there. It's a very small list, and that's one of the more prominent ones, I would say.
The subgenre.
Yeah, very sub. Yeah. Sub of the sub.
So Hara takes a weird bounce off the rope. Do you remember this? Like, he was kind of thrown off the ropes and he just kind of fell down. And he's really selling that he's gassed, because I think he might have been legit gassed.
Yeah.
We get to see a classic trope that I first learned of through Stampede, where the ref misses the tag from the babyface. And Jerry just sold the anguish so great.
Oh, he was like pissed off to the point it looked like he was just gonna like leave.
Yes.
He's like, I don't want to do that. I'm not playing anymore.
It's Sandy Scott, our the wrestler, or the ref, who I think is in almost all these matches. Oh no, him and Wayne Hart. Him and Wayne Hart.
Yeah, that's the two.
Are back and forth.
Yes.
But we're seeing him at his ineptitude even at this time.
Yeah. Not so much. I think he hadn't gone full heel yet. I think it was just in the works, I want to say.
Sure.
But I'm not totally sure.
He hadn't quite mastered his ineptitude.
Yes.
So Assassin Number One and Hara are just a little off when they open up, I thought. I don't know. They weren't entirely clicking. No. You can hear a lot of the crowd comments, like individual comments throughout this. I think part of that is it's a master tape. Part of it is just like it gets like deathly silent at times.
Yeah, it's a small, I mean, the Victoria Pavilion's not a huge building. And the way it was mic'd, it was definitely like close to the ring in that area. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the faces, I'll probably go into this more later. But, you know, you can see everybody so clearly.
Yeah, that was so cool. Especially when they get into, like, close-ups and stuff. And you just see such a wide variety. You see a lot of old people.
Yeah.
That one guy smoking in the front row. It seems like that cigarette never leaves his mouth.
Oh, there was a lot of smoking.
Yeah.
I mean, even the attendants were smoking cigarettes. Yes. Like, the staff, the people were smoking.
And kids.
were smoking, too.
Yeah. It was the 70s.
Yeah. And Calgary.
Yeah. So then you see another really good, they did another double team splash off the bounce, but this time it was Assassin Number One dropping a really funny looking splash. I thought the face in peril went on a little too long here.
It was long, definitely, yeah.
What's his name comes in and they tag in one of the assassins and Eddie refers to him as, oh, here comes our old cement head.
Yes.
Which this would have been before the days of Semenko, but... back in Calgary in the 80s, we hated the Oilers. We hated the Edmonton Oilers. I grew up hating Wayne Gretzky.
Yep.
He's like my favorite hockey player of all time now, obviously. He's transcends the sport. Yeah. He's just a Mr. Canada. But at the time, my dad used to, whenever we'd whine about things,
he'd
call us. He'd go, what's the matter, Wayne Gretzky? And we'd be like, shut up! But long way to get to this is he used to roll with a guy named Dave Semenko, who was known as his bodyguard.
Yeah,
and would, goon. Beat people up if anybody touched Wayne Gretzky. Yeah. It was a different time. But we always called him Cemented.
That was his nickname. Cemented. That was like on the back of his hockey card. Like, yeah. Dave's nickname is Cemented.
That's funny. That's hilarious. So, yeah, Eddie was ahead of the curve on that. So finally, Jerry Morrow gets in. He's a house of fire, throwing uppercuts and headbutts. He was great. And then before he's even got anything going, tags Hera back in again. That made no sense.
No.
And then, because Assassin Number One was able to turn it on him and like get a pin out of there just before the tape ran out. It looked like the reel just finished just before
third. Exactly. Tags right back out, and Hera gets pinned almost immediately afterwards.
Yeah, just atrocious strategy there. Yeah. It made no sense. This guy's been trying so hard to get to the...
That's why you're not a champion, Jerry.
Yeah.
That's why you had to... Eventually, you got so frustrated, you turned your back on everybody.
Yeah, and he was easily the most over in this match.
Yeah, and he'd been in the territory, I think, I want to say since like 73, 74. Yeah. So he wasn't new, and he would be there 10 years later.
Crazy.
Definitely.
When did he retire?
Don't know. He was still going into the 90s. Who knows? He may even got into the 2000s in like small areas and stuff. I think even he was like, he did tours of Japan for the smaller companies. I know that.
The man from Martinique.
Yes. Champagne Mandarin. The champagne man
before he found that champagne.
One thing I want to mention about this tag match is that Ed brings up the one lost records of the teams. Mm. Right? And I thought that was really cool. You don't hear that these days. You don't hear it at all. But I think that's something that you should mention. Like that, you know, it's such a simple thing. Just mention, you know, well, they're 8-2 as a team to explain why they're getting title shots and why they're, you know, moving up the ranks. It was a cool touch.
Yeah, makes sense. So from there, we go to a promo with Norman Frederick Charles III. Yeah, wow. Did you know this guy before?
I knew the name because he in Bret Hart's book, he talks about him a lot. I don't know if I really knew what he looked like, but wow, I immediately fell in love with him. He's an awesome heel.
Yeah. Like French-Canadian, kind of lumberjack.
Well, he's Australian.
Is he? Really?
Yeah.
He comes out,
that was legit Australian. Yeah. Huh. Yeah.
So his match didn't make it on TV, and he's out of breath.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, because this Bret Hart is running scared from me.
Yeah.
It was really one note, his promo all the way through, but it's a great note. And he finishes it with, I guarantee you, I'll take it away from you.
Yeah.
I'll take it away from you.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
It was great.
Yeah, he's...
just oozes heel charisma.
Yeah, really, really good.
Yeah.
So from this goes to John Foley, who we know, more as a manager, versus
Dan. And as J.R. Foley.
And J.R. Foley, that's right, versus Danny Babich. So I thought John Foley played a great chicken shit heel throughout this.
This is like a Bobby Heenan-esque performance.
Yeah, for sure. So Danny, he's getting dominated until Danny's Babich is dominating because he's a bigger guy. Can you tell me about Danny Babich here?
I don't know a ton. He's from Eastern Europe, maybe Croatia or Slavic, or you know.
Mm-hmm. You could tell English was not his first language.
Yeah, and I mean, this is another example of how culturally diverse Stampede was.
Yeah,
like that's one of the stereotypes kind of Stampede is that, you know, they had to rely on a lot of international talent because they couldn't afford to bring in the best talent from North America. But just throughout these episodes, you know, I finally had to mark down all the different races or nationalities.
Wild.
Black, Samoan, there's Latin, there's English, British, Irish.
Eastern European.
Eastern Europe, Japanese, Australian, Quebecois. Yeah.
And this is just from the first three episodes?
Yeah. Like, the only Canadian people were basically...
The Hearts?
Non-French Canadian were the Hearts, yeah.
That's crazy. That's really funny.
Yeah.
And it's really cool, right? Like, that shows you...
Oh, yeah. I love the diversity.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
It's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, as we're saying, Foley's getting dominated until he gets an eye rake in. We see Wayne Hart as the ref. he's not really kind of laying down the law with those every time he did the eye rakes. It's kind of just like, right. It's almost like he's just moving his mouth. Bah, 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 don't do this. Bah, bah, bah. I'm supposed to act like I'm angry now kind of thing.
Wayne Hart. Yeah. And those bell bottoms. Yeah. They're so big. Couldn't even see his feet.
We hear a light is out in the arena.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
That's the first one we hear out of this footage, the first time we hear Eddie's famous line. I guess a bit of a malfunction at the junction.
Yes.
Moro hits that every once in a while. Foley is trying to do... this is what I thought. I thought he was trying... He's kind of trying to do gym breaks, but minus the athleticism.
Right.
Is that safe to say?
Well, yeah, and I think that's true because...
Did he come out of World of Sport?
Yeah, well, I don't know about World of Sport exactly. Probably. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure he was trained in, like, you know, the... Maybe not the Snake Pit, which is, like, the most legendary one in England, mm-hmm. but in a similar sort of training place where, yeah, he would have went through all the submissions and got, like, the total shooter sort of training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was a fun match. It was paint by numbers and had lots of those kind of tropey comedy spots that maybe weren't as tropey back then, but I would wager you were still seeing it a lot.
I love the manager wrestling.
Yeah.
That's something I really love. I love Bobby Heenan matches.
Yeah, and Fuji.
I mean, yeah, Fuji was great as a wrestler before he became a manager. Well, maybe not great.
I know he's one of your favorites.
Great to me.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I know I love the manager, you know, going against someone where he's totally, you know, obviously he can't beat him, you know, legit, because he's just a little guy. Mm-hmm. But he has to do all these crazy chicken shit things and cheating and all that.
Little roly-poly Englishman.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Danny Babich wins with this deathlock, which is just a figure four, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I love that they need untangling afterwards. I can't get it out. Is this something that used to happen a lot back then?
From time to time. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're much better at selling holds and it was they were paid much more close attention to details like that back in the day.
This is the first time we hear mention of Kazabubu.
Yes.
Who's... Was Foley his manager? But so in this case, Kaz is. How do you spell this, by the way?
It's Kasavubu.
Kazavubu. Okay, I was saying boo boo again.
Was a job guy in the WWWF just prior to this. Jojo Andrews was his name. And he wouldn't live very long. He died in 1982. He was only 26. I'm not sure what the cause of death was, but. He's the current North American champion here. And yeah, I mean, Foley was like the managers in New York who, you know, like the Wizard, Blassie, and Albano, who would just go through monster after monster. And like, Kazavubu would be in the territory for a while. Then he'd be gone. And as we see, he picks up Big Daddy Ritter as like his next, you know, monster, whatever, or guy to manage.
Next project.
Yeah, yeah. Next big heel.
Mm-hmm. We'll get to him. Goodness me. Great stuff. So from this, right after this match, we cut to the interview with promo, or promo with interview with Babich in the ring. But Foley is still in the ring lying down because his leg is still hurt. This is why I'm sad. We learned that Babich, English is his second language.
Yeah.
And that's when we meet Kasabubu, or Kasavubu, see?
That's a tough one.
No, I'm not going to be able to fix that. For here, Foley cuts a promo while he's still lying down on the rig. That was great. I love it.
And Ed gets down on...
To lies down, down with him, right just like all relaxed kind of thing.
That was
super
so cool.
Comfortable.
Yeah.
And he's saying, that was an illegal hold. I'm going to ride into the NWA, the National Wrestling Alliance, and make sure they remove this hold.
Yeah.
And he's like, you're crazy, Stan. Like, get out of here. And he kind of sums it up to go to the commercial. So that was hilarious.
Yes, that's great.
Him lying down on the ground still. Foley's awesome, man.
He is.
He's really good.
He's really, really good.
So the next match, it's called a special bout. Do you know why this was?
I don't know.
Is it like invitation kind of thing? I don't know. So they call it a special bout. We're at the 6-minute mark. And it sounds like up to this point, it's been like a really well-fought match, like kind of back and forth kind of thing.
Yeah, but, Big Daddy Ritter and Patty Ryan.
Sorry, pardon me. Patty Ryan, what did they call him? The Irish Leprechaun. The Irish Leprechaun. Like, didn't really have to think much about that.
Oh, that was, creative.
It's Big Daddy Ritter. For those of you who don't know, JYD.
Yes,
JYD.
Junkyard Dog, yeah.
And So like I said, we get in about the 6-minute mark, and it looks like they've been having a standard wrestling match, but right away, Ritter grabs something from his boot and yep. just conks Ryan and opens him up. And he is just, this is the middle of the card.
Show. Yeah.
and this guy is just pleading like a stuck pig.
Totally.
And Ritter's just high stepping, loving
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And while keeps going back and working the cut. I know your boy Pete loves those, right?
Pete loves when you work the cut. Match. Pete, you gotta watch this match.
Alright. he starts choking him. Ryan gets in an eye gouge. The crowd is just freaking out
yeah.
because Ryan, this white meat baby face, is just bleeding all over the place.
Yeah.
Patty Ryan starts to fight back with some haymakers. In the middle of all this just sloppy, like brawling, what's his name, throws in a neck breaker kind of Russian leg sweep.
Yes,
Russian leg sweep. Like, where did that come from?
I know. This isn't the junkyard dog that I'm familiar with.
Patty Ryan says a bit more of a comeback, but then one more loaded punch from Ritter conks him out. Ritter cuts a great promo afterwards. Just he's like, one punch book that took that big fat Spock pug off his feet, baby. And he's like, he wants to talk a lot about how great he is, but he can't keep a continuous thought. He wants to like, oh wait, I want to talk about my body now. I want to talk about how much I quit. So each sentence doesn't connect to the next one until finally he's like, go check this out, and goes up to pose. And he's shocked that people are booing him. That's great stuff. I'm like he's like legitimately or like kind of got upset that like he's surprised. Well, how could you not like me?
Well, it's great because you know a heel or a villain, they don't see themselves being villains. Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah, that was tremendous. He. In that interview, he was just by himself, right? He hadn't taken on Foley as his...
He was definitely by himself for that one.
So I think we learn there in the next episode, we see that Foley's representing him now.
Yeah. No, Ryan was, like, such a bloody mess. I mean, Waylon remarks, like, this is the most blood I've seen in a long time. This was the first, when the footage was still on the network, I watched this.
Yes.
And I was, like, immediately, I think I texted you or... And with my Titans buddies, I also mentioned, I was like, you got to watch this match because it comes out of nowhere. I wasn't expecting anything. It's like, you know, JYD's rep is, you know, he was super, you know, charismatic, super popular. But, you know, in the early 80s with Mid-South, he was, you know, more
involved
athletic.
And involved in some really good angles.
And he was so over, he didn't have to do anything, really. He was like Hulk Hogan. Like, he didn't even have to work. Like, the crowd just loved him. Yeah, he didn't have to do anything to get a reaction. So he didn't really do too much.
And it became even less so.
When he came to the WWF, then he got into drugs, and, you know, he started to gain a lot of weight, and his matches really suffered. So this is a revelation that, you know, Big Daddy Ritter, he has so much more variety to his wrestling moveset or whatever you want to call it. I was totally surprised.
Yeah, it was great. Really good stuff. So next we have an international tag team belt champion, the Castillos, with Raul and...
Fidel. Of course.
There's that hotbed of... it's just ball players and wrestlers.
Yes.
Come out of
again,
Cuba.
No less than 4 Cuban heels in the territory at that time.
Insane.
Or, well, kayfabe
Cubans. That's insane.
Cubans.
I wonder if they had to work against each other.
I think they were actually maybe from Mexico, based on what I kind of looked up.
That's funny. Also, is that, you know, still Cold War, you know?
Yes, I don't think there was any legitimate Cubans in wrestling.
No. That's funny. So they're taking on our native sons, Bret Hart and Keith Hart. This one starts 12 minutes in, and Raul is working Brett's knee, and here we're seeing Brett do his old favorite kind of stuff. We see it in the next match, too, where he just loves to sell a knee.
Yeah.
It sounds like, from what they're describing between these two teams, like it's been a good feud after the last result. What were they saying?
Well, the Castillos have the belts.
Yeah.
It's probably gone on for a while. I didn't make a note of the exact length of how long this had been going on. But yeah, it had probably been going on for a while, and you know, that was the arc would be, the heel team would get the belts, they'd have a run, then a new face team would come up, beat them, and then you would just repeat it with the, you know, a new heel team coming up to challenge them, and it just went on forever.
So right away, Keith Hart, he has some good technique. He just looks comparatively soft to, like, even with the other two guys in there, I don't know if... I can't put my finger on it.
No, I can't either. He's just missing something
mm-hmm.
That Brett has, and even Bruce has, and mm-hmm. then, of course, Owen would have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like maybe it's just a certain passion level?
I think it's the mustache. If he had shaved the mustache, he would have been fine.
Yeah, I think maybe, and this is just speculation, obviously, is around so much, is that I think he saw it more as a blue-collar
yeah.
job than any
yeah,
of the
he
other
was
guys.
He wasn't he a firefighter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he ran for, was he an alderman for a while?
Maybe.
And that's city council in Canada.
Yeah.
MLA.
I guess maybe he just didn't have the same passion mm-hmm. that the others had for it.
Yeah.
But he would still be there in the mm-hmm. in our era.
Yeah. Oh, I remember. He was in that famous, the Hearts against the Shawn Michaels Knights. In that
match, way back, even as late as that. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he was basically, well, of course, he was retired. Then there wasn't even a
that had to have been his last match, unless he would have just done some kind of.
I want to say he wrestled on the Stu Hart anniversary show in 1995, but yeah, just mm-hmm. a bunch of one-offs.
Yeah,
but yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, he has a pretty good sequence in here.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought it was cool when Brett got tagged in and he tried to do, like, it was almost a Zack Sabre Jr. like kind of bridge pin. It didn't quite work. He was way too close to, do you remember this?
Mm.
Like, he kind of, like, you know that pin that.
Yeah,
kind of tried to do that at one point, but he was right by the Castillos when it happened, so it got kicked. Didn't have a chance to let it shine. I don't know if it would have worked with that audience, anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Another abdominal stretch. And our beloved, who should show up, but NFC, I can never remember what's his full name again.
Norman Frederick
Charles
III.
Yeah, it's a long, that's a mouthful. Shows up, I guess he showed up,
mm-hmm.
We couldn't see him, but
mm-hmm.
Keith had ran out, I guess he's getting involved with, Brett was out on the outside of the ring with somebody else,
Brett,
and Keith ran out and then got counted out and just Bedlam followed.
Mm-hmm. Stu gets involved.
Yeah.
Lays in some patented stiff shots.
Yeah.
Like we saw in the other match. Yeah,
that's the only kind of shot. The only shot I know.
I only threw a worker stiff shoot punches.
I thought Keith's promo starts awesome. He's like, so we blew it.
Yeah. It did start hot. It's like, well, he's very honest.
Brutal honesty. But it was just, it was that goddamn Northern Frederick Charles.
And he starts making excuses.
Yeah.
That's why you're not going to become anything.
Yeah. They're both out of breath. I really noticed.
Yeah, Brett couldn't hardly speak.
Yeah,
he wanted to, but he was
huffing. Brett really had a fro and an afro in this. In this
curly long hair.
Yeah. They challenged him to a 6-man elimination tag. And say maybe we'll put some money on it,
right?
Let's go with the Cuban mafia.
Yeah,
and then we see more from Charles III again.
Yeah,
his great stuff. He's like, that's okay with me. He's so on board.
Yeah, he's such a scumbag.
Yeah, really great.
Going back to the match, isn't Wayne Hart being the referee a total conflict of interest?
Sure. Big
Did
time.
They ever address
Big
this?
Time. Like I guess they don't say. Like, I remember there is a part where it's like, so Brett will have to rely on his brother here, his brother Keith Hart, and now here comes Wayne Hart to check on things. So it's just like, is that his brother too? We all know.
Well, I mean,
it's
everyone knew that.
Yeah.
It's obvious. They look very much alike.
I remember you remember in the 80s when he was mm-hmm. working at a karate angle for a short
while.
Yeah,
when he wrestled, he always did the karate gimmick.
Yeah, it was kind of like Bischoff.
Yeah,
later
kind
years.
Of like he. I don't know. He was definitely like the black sheep as far as like becoming mm-hmm. a wrestler is concerned in the family.
Mm-hmm.
It just didn't take with Wayne at all.
Yeah,
but he was the ref for
forever.
Forever.
Yeah. So this next match, it's a best 2 out of 3 falls. Starts with John Foley suspended from a cage. This card is insane.
Yeah, I know. Just a regular Saturday show. Blood, tag team title matches, gimmicks, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff. Managers wrestling.
Yeah, here's where, Last Battle of Atlanta stole their shit from. No, I mean, had there been people
Oh, yeah.
Is this something that happened a lot?
Yeah, this was something that probably God knows how long I went back. The manager in the cage thing.
But with their hard camera, they only have that one hard camera. You couldn't really get a good view of him in the cage.
No, he was way back, even, like, beyond, behind the crowd. You know, like, he was in front, or, yeah, he was nowhere close to the ring, really.
It was really weird.
Weird
area. Eddie made a joke about it. Some of the fans are starting to feed him peanuts.
Yes.
That was good. So this, so this is Casabubu versus Alaliani. Alaliani.
Alaliani.
Alaliani. How do you spell it?
Alaliani. It's L-E-I-L-A-N-I.
Okay.
What do I have on him? He worked in Stampede a lot in the '70s, but doesn't seem to have much else anywhere besides Stampede. But he was off and on throughout the '70s in Stampede.
So this is, we get into this match. Leilani from now on. He's up 1-0 in the best 2 out of 3 falls, and Casavubu evens up the score right away to make it 1-1. There's an extended choke and stuff against the ropes. Casavubu misses with a splash off the second rope, and the crowd really came alive for that. Leilani botches the reverse Irish whip. Did you see this? This was they had to redo the ending at the end of this. So he's getting whipped into the corner,
right?
And he kind of loses his grip with it and kind of like doesn't even kind of hit the turnbuckle. But they kind of call an audible and do it over to the other side and hits it. And huge win. And to quote Eddie, the crowd is thunderstruck. We've got a new North American heavyweight champ.
Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting that the baby, even though Casavu was out, the baby face goes in for more shit kicking.
Yeah.
Ed makes his way to the ring. But Leilani is way too out of breath to cut a promo. But he doesn't have to. And it does kind of feel like a quick shoot little thing from him, like, I'm so happy to be here, thank you.
Right.
I mean, it wasn't much of a match.
No.
But a really great finish, and showed you that this crowd was behind this guy.
Yeah.
Or at least really wanted to see the gold taken off of Casavubu.
Yeah. I'm not sure how long Casavubu had it. And I guess we should mention Casavubu, I guess he's playing like this African, like,
Ugandan,
yeah. Maybe even like sort of with, you know, like a hint of like voodoo or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know, the name sort of suggests that.
Yes.
But yeah, he's a very big man. Fun character.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we'll see him again.
Yeah, we got more to come.
So this is almost the end of the episode, but then we see Big Daddy Ritter.
Yep.
Has come back, and he is looking gangsta.
Pimp.
He's looking pimp. He said, I've come out here, I want to congratulate Leilani. And I love that Eddie's like, why do I think he's not entirely sincere? And he just starts shit kicking Leilani and just boom, hightails it after he gets like five stuff. It was really great stuff. Yeah. And again, weird baby face, he's like, oh yeah, I'll go back again, but a non-title shot.
Like,
that's the last thing he says. I'll offer him a non-title shot.
A little yalla.
Yeah. And that's how I like this. So they packed a ton into this, what is just over 45 minutes here.
Mm-hmm.
That was a really entertaining show.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, say what you will about the clipped matches, but this is, to, you know, when you watch the whole TV show, you know, it's very entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we don't have the full 20-minute matches and stuff, but come on.
Yeah. And they've got their stories they want to get over to keep drawing, and you've got an hour of TV time.
Yeah.
So I think the alternative is a far better choice. And probably the only choice that Stu would have had to you know, keep doing what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, with the time, like, some of the territories had more TV time, like up to even like 2 hours of time, so you would have had more time to show longer matches, different philosophies.
Sure.
You know, this was the show, like, this was highlights of the show, the main show in the city that they were selling tickets to draw money, right? It wasn't a studio show like a lot of the territories had, where you would just see, you know, squash matches and stuff. building towards like a big house show that they didn't even film or, you know, film, but really didn't put it on TV or anything other than in clips. But it's the criticisms about the length of matches and the clipping come from the hardest of the hardcore wrestling fans that are obsessed with having full matches, you know. And yeah, Stampede doesn't have that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, if I guess it's kind of like with like pop music, is it the song that is the most important thing?
Right.
Is it the album? Is it, you know, a body of work? And I think for different wrestlers and for different territories, it's it has different values. Like you said, different philosophies.
Yeah.
And if, like, this, you know, the Stampede had its ups and downs, but there was a, we talked about when we saw that 61 footage, this formula, they did not stray from it.
And, no, it was successful. It was, I mean, watching it on TV as a kid, I don't, you know, as a kid, of course, I wasn't complaining, oh, they didn't show the whole match. Right?
I didn't even think about
it. You want to see the whole match, buy a ticket and go to the Victoria Pavilion and watch it live. You know, that was the whole point of it.
And some of them, they just couldn't air, right? I remember hearing those.
That was a great way to entice you to come to watch it at the Pavilion. It's like, well, we're not going to show this match on TV because it's so violent. Oh, well, I got to buy a ticket to see it. So that's the nature of promoting at the time. And, you know, some of the territories, you know, were a bit more generous giving out their main event matches in full on TV. But, you know, it was actually the exception and not the rule. And Stampede's more in line with how it was done in most of the territories.
Cool.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and placetobenation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with The Sports Lounge, The TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaceMation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the reaction shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We've got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
Shall we move on to
the
next episode? December 15th, 1978. Does that mean there's a couple weeks in between? Were they weekly at this time?
Yeah, they were weekly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay, this starts off with our man, Jerry Morrow, the man from Martinique, versus Mr. Hito.
Mr. Hito. He trained Bret Hart.
I knew I'd heard the name before.
Yeah, him and I think the other, the Sakurada, who was on this show. It may not have been Sakurada, but it was definitely Hito and another Japanese fellow that trained Bret Hart a few years before this, I think, 77. So, and Hito was still around in like the 86 time frame, and he was a babyface.
Was he teaming with Hase?
I don't know if that was...
I remember Hase did have a tag part.
Yeah, but I think it was... I want to even say it was like Benoit or someone, Johnny Smith, one of those guys, Ben Bassarab. There was a ton of those tight baby faces in the territory at that time. But yeah, no, Hito helped train Bret Hart.
Cool. So Jerry's working the arm to start here. Get lots of headbutts from Hito, but Jerry refuses to let go of that arm. We're learning here that Mr. Morrow just owned this curtain jerk position because he's just as over in this match as he was in the other one.
He's the Johnny Rods of Calgary.
So Hito eventually breaks free and then locks a claw to the midsection, a really good old school wrestling move.
Stomach claw. Tyler Kowalski.
Yeah, looks like an appendectomy without an anesthetic. Good facials from both throughout, especially when it got in close. Jerry Morrow explodes for a hope spot, but misses the drop kick. I thought that was pretty funny. That's what slows him down, is like Hito's able to just kind of get out of the way. And then he missed the cross body, which looked great. He was really just really athletic. I don't remember... we're seeing him 8 years later.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, 10 years puts a lot of miles on you.
Mm-hmm. Here we hear our second malfunction at the junction. Nasty finisher.
I liked it from
Mr. Hito. Fisherman's carry.
Yeah.
Into the, almost like a go to sleep, but it's to the gut.
Knee to the gut. That was great. Decisive.
Really cool.
Put Morrow down.
Yeah, decisively. You knew that was it. Everybody in the arena knew that was it.
Yeah, that's a kill shot right there.
That was good. Not a bad little snippet of a match. I don't think I saw how much we had missed.
Hito was very noisy.
Yeah. And the crowd was going back at him. That was good.
Non-stop.
So then we cut to a promo with Big Daddy Ritter. Now he's with John Foley. And there's a nasty, fresh-looking scar on John Foley's face.
Blading, kids.
I don't even think it looked like it was like almost across his eye or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
And it looked like like he just put peroxide on it. Did not look good. Foley's now his mouthpiece.
Yeah.
Foley says that Babbage can pack his bags. And we get a brief Stu appearance there.
Yeah.
I don't really know what he has to say. But then, out of nowhere, we get an interview with Minnesota Fats. It was so
random.
So weird. And you can tell Eddie's trying to get at least a soundbite or a bit of a promo out of him. He's like, I've heard you know how to talk a big game too.
Yeah.
He's just like, here, I'll set you up. Here's a softball for you, slugger.
Then he cuts a heel promo.
Yeah, kind of, pretty much. Talks about his accomplishments.
He was a pool shark.
Yeah. It's like, hey, you got a lot of cars. I own a dozen limousines. He just keeps going off on his Duesenbergs. He was really all about his Duesenbergs. You know what a Duesenberg is? What kind of car? Is that like a Rolls Royce kind of a...
I don't know, man.
Yeah, I had never heard of it before.
Minnesota Fats. I mean, he was the inspiration for Jackie Gleason's character in The Hustle.
Yeah. So bizarre. He was probably just in town.
Yeah, probably.
I think he said he was doing, I'm not sure what it was.
He probably toured, you know, the States and Canada doing, like, you know, pool exhibitions. Yeah. And people would come and see that.
And this was the show to see in town.
And maybe it was even at the Victoria Pavilion. Who knows? I'm sure he was tight with Stu. Stu probably had all the celebrity friends that Stu had.
Hey, this guy will give you some gold. Reach out to him. What's a fucking Duesenberg?
Okay. So we go to next match. Norman Frederick Charles III, our boy, versus Dynamite Kid.
Mm-hmm.
This is the number one contender for the British Commonwealth, which is essentially their
junior title, junior heavyweight.
Yeah, so like their IC.
Or even like a cruiserweight belt. Yep. You know, it was for the smaller guys.
And here we see Norman Frederick Charles playing the heel great in ring, too. Mm-hmm. You get a really good look at the old guy smoking in the front row. And this is when I really saw there's a great mix of just personality in that crowd, man.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of, you know, yeah, teenagers, young, even younger than
really
that
young kids.
A lot of people in their 20s, I would say, that probably were going, had been going for years. Mm-hmm. A lot of people that were there every show, the same people in the front row. Of course, you know, it's an old school wrestling crowd, so you're going to have a lot of elderly people there that had been going to the shows since fucking Stu opened the doors in the early 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
Yeah. So Dynamite obviously has this great energy with his offense and his selling. I know he gets flack for not selling, right?
But this is young Dynamite, and we're going to, in a future episode, when we talk about the match he has with Mr. Wrestling, it's an atypical Dynamite match as far as the Dynamite you think of later against Tiger Mask, and then in the 80s, or later in the 80s with the British Bulldogs, where it was just go, 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 spot. Yeah. You know, he was, at this time, it was still, you know, he had his training in the more traditional manner, so he was, you know,
okay.
And it's maybe arguably a better Dynamite Kid.
I think so, or I don't know. Yeah, it's different.
Yeah, more interesting.
Yeah. Sure. The Dynamite hits like an enziguri to Charles III, and Charles kind of sells it a little too late. Do you remember this?
No.
It's kind of like smack, slap the leg, and then he jumps out of the ring. And a really kind of awesome body slam pile driver from...
Yeah, it's like a tombstone. Well, it became a tombstone, but it started as a body slam.
Yeah, for the finish.
Yeah.
Dynamite cuts another out of breath promo. It's just always everybody's out of breath, and Brett joins in awkwardly.
Yeah,
kind of saying, "Yeah, no, it'd be nice to have a real match here."
And they were building this was building towards Dynamite turning heel for the first time.
Wow.
He came into the territory, I think, in '77, late '77, as a babyface, but now we're seeing at this very moment, like the subtle signs that he's turning heel.
Good.
And because him and Brett had been partners.
Mm-hmm.
And Aurel and Bruce, too, in Dynamite.
Yeah.
They were very tight. Like, it was portrayed as, like, Kid was, like, part of the family.
Right? Yeah.
And then, we're seeing the beginning of this heel turn.
That's good. So then we get our interview with Patty Ryan, who we haven't heard from since the last bloodbath.
I guess he's not an Irishman from Ireland, because he didn't have a brogue.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right. Good point.
Maybe just from Boston,
New York
or something.
He's like, no, we haven't seen you lately. He's like, yeah, I was cut up pretty bad.
He's been gone. Well, it's been a few weeks, We lost a lot of blood. Just got out of the hospital.
And that's interesting. Like, it's kind of like he's doing the math in his head about who's going to fight who and where he's going to go in the rankings. And he says he should be able to challenge for the title when they go to their shows in Montana. So he's asking for support from all the Irishmen in Montana.
is that a thing? Is there a lot of Irish?
Yeah, Butte and Billings. Just huge Irish contingent there. And then we get a promo from Don Gagne.
Yeah, Don Gagne. Did you recognize him?
No, he had like a Wolfman Jack.
Yeah, because you've seen him Quebecois a lot accent. Later on, not as a wrestler. He was
no
a
idea.
Manager in the WWF.
Frenchie Martin? Oh.
Yeah. Huh. And he was Pierre Martel in the 70s. Kayfabe brother of Michel Martel, who was Rick Martel's real older brother. And this is the first I've ever seen him as Don Gagne. And I guess, or Gagne, as we're supposed to say it. We're not supposed to say it as Gagne, because that's the Canadian
version. Mm-hmm. He practices that Gagne metrics or whatever.
Yeah. But I think he wrestled a lot. Yeah, he did in Stampede a lot in the 70s as Don Gagne. So he always had like a different alias everywhere he went.
Mm-hmm. I'm not a loser! That's what he shouts at one point. Accuses Stu of anti-Québécois bias.
Yeah.
And then he mentions, like, he's just going after everybody.
Yeah, he was going against faces and heels. He called Ritter a pimp.
Yeah, cool, daddy. The pimp.
I guess pimp was an insult at this time. Yeah, it was really funny. It was short, but it was really, really funny.
Yeah, it was cool.
All right, International Tag Team Championship looks like a rematch. Oh, no, they were against the Castillos last time.
Yeah, so they've won the titles in the intervening period.
I guess so.
Yes.
So, yeah, so this time it's the Cuban Assassins.
Yes.
Against Bret Hart and Keith Hart. We join in 1-0 for the Cuban Assassins. Best 2 out of 3 falls. We're 20 minutes in this time.
Mm-hmm.
Bret's selling that knee again.
Yeah.
Tags, you've got a really hot crowd again. The crowd loved the Harts.
They did.
Cuban Assassin 1 does some really good stooging with the back and forth in the corner there. Nicely executed backbreaker by Bret to win tie it up.
Yeah.
It wasn't as definitive as that Mr. Hito finisher, but you knew that it was meant to
right,
you know, end things.
Yeah.
And it was all because of his execution. I'm sure you guys have heard that Bret's pretty good at executing things, even at this stage. I mean, we're still seeing a young guy figuring things out.
Yeah, we're totally still figuring things out, but he's got, like, the basics of, like, he was, I think that's something that came to him very quickly was like the execution of moves and making them look good.
Crisp. Yeah, I thought it was funny. He throws on a Boston Crab. You don't see Bret Hart doing a Boston Crab very often.
No.
Cuban Assassin number 1 works Bret knee some more. Bret makes a tag. Keith again, I'm saying capable, just not a lot of flash.
No.
But then as I wrote that, he emptied Cuban Assassin 2 over the top and gets the pin on Cuban Assassin number 1 to retain. So he got the flashy finish. Keith's older, right?
Yeah, Keith's older.
Yeah. I think that you can kind of see that playing out in this, because he's kind of still kind of driving the bus, even though at this point you can tell that Bret's more talented.
Yeah. Keith's more experienced, but Bret has, like, that natural skill. And, yeah, it wouldn't be long where... until Bret's, like, the top face in the company.
Like the general.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you hearing those kids?
Yes.
Yeah. I live in a neighborhood. There's kids playing outside. I don't know if you guys are picking it up. They're either having lots of fun or they're in pain. All right. So from this, we go to another 2 out of 3 falls match. How many per card would you see would average?
The 2 out of 3 falls? I think they were just for the title
matches. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. As far
so
as
this was a title match? Big Daddy Ritter versus Danny Babbage?
Well, maybe not.
Yeah, because this one starts and it's already one fall apiece.
You're right, this is a 2 out of 3 falls.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I know definitely, like, the earlier bouts weren't 2 out of 3 falls that we looked at.
Yeah. I'm just seeing, you know, they start to pop up more
maybe
and more.
Maybe because this was, like, a match for, like, the winner would become number one contender, top challenger, so maybe that's why it was 2 out of 3 falls. Mm-hmm. More serious, more stakes.
The atmosphere again is super hot, to quote Ed again, a total uproar. Foley gives Ritter something and he hits Babbage and gets DQ'd. This time Sandy Scott saw it. Babbage is irate and he's looks like he was cut open.
He was not bleeding, like, not like Patty Ryan, but no, he was bleeding.
And Ritter leaves a kind of trail of blood. I was thinking, like the two matches we've seen with him,
he makes you bleed. Gets Ritter, he's gonna bloody you.
Yeah, I think it's funny. So it cuts to the promo, because earlier in this episode, Big Daddy Ritter. Everyone's calling him different things throughout this. Foley says,
Daddy Ritter.
We learned that he had said, Foley's going to be my mouthpiece now, and we got Foley in there, and right away Foley says, talk to Big Daddy. And so Big Daddy Ritter starts telling Stu and his sons to back off, then starts to lean in on the people of Calgary, and it was edited, so he must have said something
really bad. Oh, yeah, the audio, cut off. I wasn't sure if that was just a
either he's just
sorry.
Yeah.
He was
it could have been something in the 70s that he just can't say these days. I'm just shrugging my imagination is running wild. That was hilarious. And so they're about to leave, and just before they leave, Foley brings up one more time that I'm gonna get that leg lock blocked. I've written to the National Wrestling Alliance.
Yeah.
That was funny. So here's our main event. It's, again, just another nutty card. A strap match.
Strap match.
Between Sakurada versus our boy, Kasabubu.
Yeah.
Kasabubu looks pretty choked out early. Like they're just choking the hell out of each other.
This is a crazy match.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just, you can go on.
It was just extended strangling.
Exactly.
Like just looked like two men just literally trying to kill each other.
Yeah.
And not a lot of action. Oh, yeah. Then eventually, Kasabubu starts using the buckle and opens up Sakurada.
Yeah, there's blood.
Kasabubu begins to bite the wound. And this is all happening right in front of the front row. And there's just these old people watching this guy bite into this open gash of a wound just calmly. Like, another day at the pavilion.
Yeah, well, pretty much. They'd lived through the mid-70s gang war bloody feuds that I talked about on another episode. So, this was nothing.
So, I thought Kasabubu showed some really good facials before, like, some of these second bites. Like, he'd be like, really kind of lean in, like he's really going to... And the crowd kind of oohed with that. I remember with the second one, they're kind of like, oh, God, this guy's a monster. It gets deathly quiet until Sakurada gets... a brief hope spot, and it goes back to more strangling, and it cuts at a really weird place. We don't get to see the end of the match.
Well, it was like it got too violent.
Yeah.
And like, what happened? He like choked him out completely. You know, it was like I'd never seen a match like this before. That
it was really weird.
And Ed was burying it the whole way.
I know, like he. This is what I think he gets in a lot of criticism.
Yeah, well, I think this is, like, he was more, when it came to being a wrestling fan, he was more into the technical stuff, and not this, like, just, like he kept saying, there's not much wrestling here, and, you know, there's, kept complaining about how there was no wrestling, and there wasn't, it was just choking, and this was probably the stuff that he complained about and didn't like, because it was... kind of, I don't know, I won't say over the top, but...
It was just like, Jesus,
there was nothing redeeming about it. And both these guys were heels, too, right? Who was the baby face
in this
match? It
was so weird. It was just silence. And, like, there was a woman, you see a woman in the front row, she's not even watching. There's, like, all this stuff happening. Everyone just seemed, like, okay with this.
Well, and it was kind of boring, too, because they weren't doing anything. Yeah. It was, like, almost the equivalent of, like, sitting in a headlock.
I guess.
But it was,
the guy with the big Ugandan.
Well, it was unusual. People didn't know how to react. Because wrestling's all based on going through the same tropes and doing the same things to get the reaction. This was, what are we supposed to do? Who are we supposed to cheer for? You know, where's the heat here, exactly?
Yeah, and it just ended abruptly, and, you know, Ed tells us how it ended up. I can't even remember. But Stu's back in the ring.
Yeah,
see him looking good. He says there's going to be a lumberjack match for Babich and Ritter. So
maybe we'll throw a couple guys on the outside.
Actual lumberjack on the outside.
Hey, no, we can use some wrestlers.
And the lumberjack match was born. Ed, I thought it was neat that Eddie kind of gives a State of the Union at the end here.
Right.
Kind of lets us, we've got 3 minutes of tape left here.
Yeah.
Let's... you know, kind of go over the feuds again, and what's coming up. I thought it was funny just before it ended. Stu's mentioning Kasabubu. He's like, "Yeah, that guy's one big Ugandan." He really kind of had to stop himself. I think you guys can draw the conclusions to where he may have been headed with that.
One thing I want to ask you: who had a better toupee? Ed Whalen or Bruno Sammartino?
I'll go Bruno. Bruno, it looked because it kind of had like that kind of brilliant kind of thing and stuff.
Term.
And that's not easy to recreate.
No,
that's funny.
That's true. Yeah,
that's funny. But over the years, Whalen's toupee got better as the technology grew.
Yeah, exactly.
At this point, it wasn't where it needed to be.
No,
it was like George Lucas trying to do what he really wanted to do with the special editions.
You get the digitally remastered toupee. And
okay, so we've just hit the hour mark here. I think we won't get into the third one, but I think we'll go briefly over this, what just kind of luckily fell in our lap here, coincidentally.
Out of the clear blue sky.
The network has added, with their Hidden Gems, one match from
1961 Stampede Wrestling. Mm-hmm. What is really cool is it's a match that, like, this had to have been, doing the math, two episodes before the earliest known episode that we talked about in our first...
first
part of this.
With the pot, Marilla's pot.
We know this, because the pot is at $550, yes. And it keeps going up by $50 each mm-hmm. time. Mm-hmm. So we see Eddie introduces it as Matt Time again.
Matt Time.
Yeah.
Which I meant to look more into this, because mm-hmm. it seems like there was two different TV shows. There was the show that would be the show we're more familiar with, where that would show the card from Friday night mm-hmm. at the Pavilion. But this was Saturday morning. Like, he even specifies that it's Saturday at 10 a.m.
Wild.
And it seemed like he called it the Matt Time Workouts. It gives, like, the impression it was more like a exhibition sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that on the full episode.
We did it, yeah, with the one that was really not a competition kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So it's... I mean, the show was really popular, so they got, like, a spinoff, I guess. And maybe this was the show that Ed was doing, and Sam Menaker was doing the Friday show. Hmm. But I don't know the exact schedule. But this is, like, a different show. This is kind of, like, a unique thing, you know, outside of the normal
interesting.
Show.
Mm-hmm. So, it's Gina Morella, mm-hmm. Gorilla Monsoon, as we've mentioned, versus Dave Rule, who we talked about last
episode.
Yeah,
this
so
was,
cool.
When I saw this, like, because the list came out with the hidden gems, and for a lot of people, the big thing was the Last Battle of Atlanta mm-hmm. finally dropped, or was uncovered. But when I saw the listing for this, I was almost equally as excited, yeah. because it was Dave Rule, a guy I just talked about.
You just done research,
biggest
right?
biggest stars of the 50s and 60s in the territory, and there was no matches, no footage mm-hmm. of them. Before this, so mm-hmm. it was cool that this, of all the people that Morella was wrestling, that it was Dave Rule,
yeah.
like a guy I really wanted to see.
Yeah, it was really cool to see him. Mm-hmm. He's playing the heel, grabbing the tights early.
Mm-hmm.
Some good mat work from both, as you'd expect in this era. There was a great push off from Gino and Sell from the Rule. He kind of went over the referee. Do you remember this? He kind of got pushed over the ref.
Yeah.
Solid full Nelson locked in mm-hmm. by Gino. Ed mentions Brower here. He's not supposed to show up, so it sounds like this was something they keep going back to.
He's this dark presence that's, like, always in the back. He may arrive at any time.
Dog Dick Brower.
The One Man Riot Squad. Yeah.
The One Man Riot Squad. I forgot about that. Good stiff body blows from Gino, followed by a huge toss, the first huge toss we see.
Yeah, the deals.
Rule shows that pluckiness and gets tossed again, and the crowd's loving this. Rule, I'm seeing here, yeah, like that solid mat technique. You can see how Stu would have liked him or influenced him.
Yeah.
Ed mentions Rule being surly, which is a really good description. You can kind of see it in his work.
And he had the 5 o'clock shadow look. He's got, like, a very rugged look to him that can go work as a heel and as a babyface.
I know this term is always used. I just can't think of a better way to describe it. Like, everyone else says, like, Pitbull-like.
Yeah.
Right? How else do you describe those kinds of wrestlers? Like, I'm thinking, like, Ishii nowadays in New Japan.
Okay.
Yeah,
because he wasn't the biggest guy. So he would, you know, that would have been probably his gimmick that he had, you know, he was a good scrapper. And it worked great when he became a babyface because he's not the biggest guy, so it's easy to get sympathy for that, and the crowd rallies behind it.
Yeah, the size difference was very believable in this match because of the way they worked. Remember there was a spot where Rule has Gino in a lock and tickles his tummy in the middle of an extended
Is that
hold.
when Waylon says, Morella's in a gay mood? Which,
hey, did Stu ever stretch Gino?
Oh, possibly.
Because I was thinking about this the other day. That would have been the only time might have been one of the first times where he might have said, "Will you stop?"
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's where he started it.
Okay. The time starts to run out because we notice that we've got a 10-minute draw.
Minutes. Yeah.
And I love Rule just getting desperate, so trying to just get in there and try to throw harder punches and Gino into Gino's head, and he gets tossed three more times. It's such a good thing that just kept coming back to him. He's like, no, he can't do it. He's just like, Geno's can't be beat. He's too much of a big guy. You can try to get to him.
Yeah.
But this makes sense if you're building up this pot and building up this guy to be this monster. Mm-hmm. I thought this was a great match.
Mm-hmm. And he didn't have to pin Rule. You know, he just, you know, Rule just didn't beat him within the time frame. So, yeah, it's a win-win situation, really, because you're building up a good wrestler. I don't know if, like, Morella, I get the impression he was kind of a heel, or maybe he didn't start that way, but I think you see it kind of went to his head, maybe, all the success and winning and the money and all that. So, yeah, it's building up a good heel, and then Rule stays, you know, he doesn't lose any standing because of this.
Yeah, so this just, you know, it adds credence to our theory that they've got all of it.
Of this footage. I don't want to go that far. No. But they definitely have.
I think we could see. I bet you we could definitely follow the whole $50 pot feud storyline all the way through.
Storyline. I'd love that. I know. If we had weekly Stampede Wrestling from the early 60s.
Yeah, just release them one at a time. We'll do it. We'll come over. We'll give you.
It's I know, like, it's I don't know how you know, it may happen eventually, but it's gonna probably be quite a few years in the future.
Who knows? Yeah, but that's it for now. I had said, I thought we'd be able to whip through all six, but
no,
turns out these are worth going through with more of a fine tooth comb here, and there's stuff worth looking at closely here. So I think next time we'll probably get into the next two at least. We might as well just do it 2-2-2 otherwise.
Sure.
Otherwise we're gonna be a weird kind of.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, it's good. We got a good time here. We don't want to get do these shows
epic long.
No, I'm all about the short, concise, to the point shows.
Much like Lucha Afterground.
Yes.
You see that?
Great. There's a segue.
As I've mentioned online on Twitter, this is the first time I'm saying it. Well, we said it on our first episode of Lucha Afterground. We've been picked up by the good people of Place to Be Nation Network. We owe so much. I've thanked Kelly on the Lucha Afterground. I'll thank him here again. You're obviously welcome. Thanks to Brad and Chad for putting us on. The first episode just dropped. It sounds like we're going to be doing it every Sunday, or at least they'll be putting them up every Sunday morning.
Cool.
It was an okay start, this one. There was something I wanted to make a connection between the two. They mentioned Johnny Smith in the most recent episode.
Yep.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was an okay start. I guess you haven't been watching. You're not caught up yet.
No,
right?
I keep wanting to watch, or not. I mean, I have it on my hard drive. Not the season premiere of season three, but yeah. I mean, but I listen to all your shows, so it's like, you know, you guys paint a picture, and I feel like I know the characters
good.
And everything.
Well, that's good to hear. I appreciate it. Yeah, no, like, I mean, you as I said, you put us over big time in that. They wouldn't have listened to us if it wasn't for you, so we owe you, buddy.
Anytime.
What's going on with you?
Let's see. Well, we just did the previous Titans was the last Battle of Atlanta show that I'm really proud of. I think that really came off great.
Yeah, I loved it. I loved it. I thought it was a blast. As I said, to you via social media or just through private message, and I think Parv's got his smile back.
And all
it took was the Holy Grail.
Yeah, we were all, you know, really good, and it's one of my favorite all-time
things. I could tell you guys were just on cloud nine throughout. This is the kind of, that kind of thing is, your show is built for when stuff like that happens.
Yeah, we had to do that show, and I was so glad that nobody beat us to it, and then we got it out. So that was great. Coming up, I have to finish the third Bruno Sammartino at the Garden. It's getting close to completion. I just don't have the time.
Yeah, no, and, you know, we've got this asshole calling you over to make you record Stampede bullshit.
I've got, like, five or six projects on the go. But
that's the one you put the most work into.
Yeah,
you
can't it takes just a long
throw
time.
Those out.
Yeah, so hopefully next week that'll drop. Marty and I are probably going to do a Tag Teams Back Again next week as well.
What are you looking at?
It'll be like Summer of 88 WWF. We may even get into the first SummerSlam.
Cool.
We haven't really decided on the matches yet, but yeah. That's what I got going.
Cool. That's great. I'm shooting another commercial tomorrow.
Yeah.
This one's for a bank. So I'm keeping busy in that department, so it's nice. Hopefully you guys will be seeing my face soon. I really am excited for that first commercial drop. I'm excited. Yes. It's going to be funny.
Awesome.
But I guess that's it for now.
Yes.
Thanks for listening, guys. Give us feedback, for goodness sake. Especially,
please.
You know, this show and any of our shows on the mm-hmm. Pro Wrestling Only boards mm-hmm. or on our Twitter.
Twitter, Facebook.
Yeah.
Wherever.
I'm. You can find me at Lucha _ After Grund. So it's GRND. And you're at MSG 1880.
Yes.
Fantastic. So yeah. That's it. In the meantime, and in between time, that's it. Another edition of Stampede Wrestling. Bye now.
Now listen, wrestling can be your passport out of the city. It's a growing sport, I'm telling you.
What's wrong with electrical tape?
There's a fighter, you know, he's not a broken toaster.
Kid Salami!
Everybody knows you now as Kid Salami. I want you to hang a few salamis around your neck. It's kind of a trademark.
Salami!
Are you ready for the dames, thugs, and heroes of Paradise Alley?
With just one match, we can be on our way to some real success.
And who's he got to wrestle?
Right. Get it.
I bet you can't.
And if someone has smashed you, then I'm going to get you. I'm going to smash your whole family.
You got a lot of style for a guy with pigeon stuff on your shoulder, Cosmo.
Sylvester Stallone. Paradise Alley.
Miracles appear in the strangest of places. Fancy meeting you here. The last time I saw you was just out of Houston. Sit down, let me buy you a beer. Your presence is welcome with me and my friend here. This is a hangout of mine. We come here quite often and listen to music. Partaking of yesterday's wine. Yesterday's wine. I'm yesterday's wine. Aging with time. Like yesterday's wine. Yesterday's wine. We're yesterday's wine. Aging with time. Like yesterday's wine.